What's up, everyone? This is the Hillside Ventures Podcast. I'm Shivam Patel, here with
Jiva
and Dinush.
And today we're going to be taking a deep dive into the edtech industry and let them explain their experiences as student venture capitalists within the space. Before we do, let's just have both of them introduce themselves.
Yeah, for sure. What's up, everybody? My name is Jiva. I'm the principal of the EdTech vertical here at Hillside. So I essentially lead the vertical. I oversee our diligence process as well as our first semester analyst in our vertical. This is my second semester at Hillside. I'm a junior here at UConn majoring in finance as well as statistics and an entrepreneurship minor.
Hey, everyone. I'm Dinush and I'm the MD of operations here at Hillside Ventures. I'm also part of the EdTech vertical. I lead all functions of Hillside on a day-to-day basis, including sourcing, diligence, marketing, recruiting, and building our network. I am a junior finance major, and I'm also doing minors in both economics and entrepreneurship.
For sure. Thank you, guys. First things first is, what made you guys interested in venture capital?
That's a good question. I think kind of my go-to answer for that question is that what I love the most about VC is that the knowledge that you need to succeed in VC is very broad, right? So you're kind of expected to know a lot of different things about a lot of different industries. You know, just in Hillside itself, although I'm in the EdTech vertical, I've been able to familiarize myself with sustainability, with insurance. So you're expected to keep up with all sorts of market occurrences. And this has always appealed to me a lot more than what you do in other careers, because you're usually in those types of careers, you're expected to know a whole lot about one specific thing. And, you know, I've always been someone that's really curious, wants to learn a whole lot about a whole lot of everything. And so VC's really continued me to allow doing that and just learn about so many different things.
Yeah. So for me, I previously had a knowledge of what private equity was, and it was interesting to me. And then once I heard about VC through several mentors and Hillside Ventures, I realized that VC is similar to private equity, but you're helping small companies grow and you're trying to find the next big thing. And that seemed really interesting to me. I wanted to be able to find the next great company, you know, like the next Apple, the next Google.
With that, if you guys could just briefly explain the edtech industry, just to give a little bit of background. I know it's pretty self-explanatory, but I think for the audience, it'd be great to get a better understanding of really what sorts of startups are in the space and what sort of things they're doing.
Sure, yeah. So the edtech industry, education technology, like you said, it's fairly straightforward. I define it as just the intersection between the use of innovative technologies and education and kind of using those technologies to facilitate and enhance learning. And this is something that I find to be really important, just given the fact that even though technology has advanced so much over just the past few years, the education system is still historically inefficient. There's still many things we need to improve upon. And yeah, we haven't seen these improvements in educational performance. And so hopefully, you know, like you mentioned, those startup unicorns are out there working towards solving this problem.
Yeah, I think Shiva did a great job summarizing the edtech industry. One thing I want to point out is a lot of people think of education as just K-12 education or higher ed colleges, but a lot of education technology companies also focus on the workforce, upskilling workers, reskilling workers, helping them continue to grow and develop their skills in order to improve in their careers and also change careers.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, education is a lifelong sort of thing. And so you're always learning. There's always ways that you can improve upon that learning.
Yeah, that's a great point. Having the ability to invest in startups that are enabling people from basically like as soon as they get into school to the rest of their lives, and having the ability to teach them different things and make an impact with their education through these different startups has been an amazing experience. Funny enough, we are all three of us are on the EdTech vertical, and it's been a great experience. Both Jeev and I have about a year, almost two semesters worth of experience now, and we've learned a ton in the space. And yeah, that's kind of leading me to the next question is, why did you guys choose this vertical?
Yeah, good question. No offense to InsurTech and sustainability, but it was kind of a no-brainer for me to want to choose education. I'm just a big believer that everyone deserves access to an education and that education is obviously a key component in just development of children and not only children, like I mentioned, you know, this is something you do your entire life. And so obviously it must be done right. And with all the technological tools available now to do so, I'm really eager just to see what types of steps are being taken that may just transform the way that students learn for years to come. I'm also particularly passionate about topics like mental health, learning for neurodivergent students. And so I like keeping up with how entrepreneurs are looking to solve problems in these spaces.
Yes. So I was actually part of the sustainability vertical when I first joined Hillside Ventures. But near the end of my first semester, I received the opportunity to attend the ASU GSV EdTech conference, and I was exposed to so many different types of EdTech companies, many different EdTech investors, and I noticed that this was something that I was passionate about and familiar with. Having, gone through the United States school system, I was exposed to many different pieces of EdTech softwares, including, Naviance, PowerSchool, Quizlet, Kahoot. All of these companies are all EdTech companies, and they may seem like, everyday things that we use, but they are also, multi-million dollar, multi-billion dollar companies. So I wanted to learn more about this space, which is why I transferred over to the EdTech vertical.
Yeah, and it's definitely been great to be able to be a student our entire lives and then be able to give back in a way that we've already experienced a lot of what the customers of these companies are experiencing right now and the pain points of them, especially in the school system. But even in general, it's really cool to see what sorts of education, materials, training, things like that that are out there and what's possible to kind of enable people to kind of learn about new things and in different ways and help propel people in different parts of their lives, I think is super inspirational and is something that, all three of us have really been able to see from a different lens, from a venture capital lens, being able to listen to these founder stories and why they got into this space has been actually truly inspiring and has made me want to kind of dive more into the ed tech space myself. So kind of wanted to transition more towards your guys' experience within Hillside and EdTech and kind of just see what has been kind of the biggest problems you have seen in the space.
Oh man, where do I begin? I'm playing. I think I see two major problems and they kind of go hand in hand. The oversaturation of the EdTech industry and also kind of just monopolies that are in this industry kind of not giving these startups an opportunity. Like I mentioned, something that we see a lot of, even while just sourcing startups, is that there are some very, very similar startups kind of targeting the same group of students doing the same thing. And like, let me preface this, I don't think this is to any fault of the founders. I think that there are many companies in this market that, although there is heavy competition, they're making great strides, they're very innovative and offer unique solutions. However, and this is where monopolies come into play, many schools are really unwilling to move away from platforms like, your PowerSchool, Google Classroom, Blackboard, Zoom, whatnot. And although these platforms, are being used so often for a reason, there are many aspects that these platforms leave unaddressed, many aspects of learning they leave unaddressed. There are a lot of startups that are looking to be the solution, but somehow some platforms just monopolize the industry and they're used by teachers everywhere. And this just leaves the startups kind of just facing an uphill battle. And there are obviously unicorns in this market, but as a venture capitalist, it is becoming very hard to identify real product differentiators when you're looking to make potential investments.
Yeah, those are all great points, Jiva. One thing that I notice is the EdTech industry is very cyclical in terms of both K-12 education sales cycles as well as the macro economy. K-12 schools have to purchase softwares and tools in order to be ready for the following school year. So typically that's, the fall, and they complete the purchases prior to that. So founders have to be able to either wait until the schools are ready to purchase, or they have to rush their products in order to meet the sales demand. And on the other side, the macro economy, I've noticed that when the economy is good, when companies have cash surpluses, they're a lot more willing to pay for these platforms to invest in their workers in order to train them, in order to improve their skills. But when the companies are cash strapped, when the economy isn't doing as well, such as currently, these companies aren't as willing to purchase these products, which is detrimental for the startups as their sales decline and they may go out of business.
Gotcha. And that brings up actually a really good point on kind of the industry itself. As Jiva and Danush mentioned, it's very oversaturated and it's very cyclical in the way that schools are looking for something new and that's hard to come by. And then when the economy is bad, when the macro economics are not looking great, like for example now, it makes it very difficult to find an opportunity for us as venture capitalists and founders to make progress and hit their milestones as business owners to make sure that they can, get to that unicorn status, that $1 billion valuation status, or even growing in general. It's been very tough in the past year, and it might continue to do so. And with that, I'd kind of love to hear more about your guys' predictions for 2023.
I am going to go with, I think augmented reality is really on the rise. You know, AR has been proven, research proven to enhance student engagement and their ability to really process and understand information. And again, AR is so much more accessible now than other technologies like virtual reality. And it's actually funny. So the other day, one of my friends recently got hired for an internship and he was being onboarded for a job. And he showed me that rather than having him complete modules or like read a PDF the way that I did it, the company actually had him download an app that uses AR to walk him through the onboarding process. So he'd like just move his phone and it would take him to various steps in the onboarding process. You know, my first reaction when I saw this was it was kind of stupid. It's really unnecessary. But at the end of the day, like, he was having fun do it. And so that's where it benefits the learner. It makes learning fun. And that's the biggest thing that especially we're seeing with younger children now. Another app that I saw is for like kindergartners, first graders, where they're able to walk around a classroom and these letters pop up before them using AR. And they're kind of being, they have to spell words using those letters. So they're walking around the classrooms trying to find those letters and build the words. So once again, it's just super fun. I wish we had it back when we were children, but you know, it's cool and up and coming technology.
Yeah. So the biggest trend that I see for 2023 is AI, artificial intelligence. We're actually currently writing a Substack article about this. And I'm sure many of you know ChatGPT has taken the world by storm. Fastest piece of technology to reach 100 million users ever. And AI is being used in all sorts of aspects, which is also leading to other companies creating, you know, supplemental software and software to detect AI use. So artificial intelligence, although it may be more of a recent thing, more of a trendy buzzword sometimes, I feel like it's taking the edtech world by storm as well. It's helping teachers be able to save time on grading. They're able to receive, you know, analysis from the software itself, so they don't have to spend as much time analyzing every single student and providing a custom learning pathway. A lot of it is being done for them. And one company I was looking at in this space is called Century Tech. And they are based in the UK. And what they do is they create a personalized learning curriculum designed to help students succeed by using artificial intelligence to analyze the students' learning patterns, determine strengths and weaknesses, and monitor their progress. So we've been looking at this company and many others because I personally feel like AI is the future and it's better to adapt to it rather than fall behind.
That's a great point, Danush. The AI has been so upcoming and it has, again, caught everyone by storm. And what's really interesting is I've recently been looking into artificial intelligence for language learning, and more specific, like personally for Spanish, using ChatGPT as my Spanish tutor, having conversations with it, I think has been really fun experience because I don't really need to rely on anyone else to be, you know, have their time. I'm able to use a technology in order to just have a conversation and better my language learning abilities. And as you guys are mentioning with your Substack article, you know, having the opportunity to dive into that space more and get more exposure there, I think is great. And being able to share with the audience, we'll definitely have that Substack linked in the show notes in future episodes, this episode, depending on when it gets out. But we'll definitely promote it so you guys can read more on kind of the artificial intelligence landscape and things like that. But that kind of brings me into, with AI, with this upcoming kind of big trend, but super important pivotal technology, what has been the coolest startups you guys have met in the space, in the edtech space, things like that?
Yeah, so this is a startup that we're actually kind of working with right now. They're called Novel Effect. I think that they offer a very unique solution to kind of the reading pandemic that we're in the middle of. You know, kids aren't reading as much as they used to. And this is a problem that's only been exacerbated over the past few years because, you know, younger children are spending months outside of the classroom. They were spending months outside of the classroom during COVID. They were forced to learn reading through Zoom, which just is not effective. And, you know, older kids honestly just didn't read during the pandemic, which you can't blame them for because, first of all, there was literally a pandemic. And also, you know, we didn't even have the motivation to do anything. So why would 10-year-olds be reading or doing anything else? And so Novel Effect is, it's sort of a, I wouldn't say it's a simple idea, but it's kind of surprising that it doesn't exist already. What they do is it's kind of a voice recognition software for when you are reading. So I'll pull up the Novel Effect app, I'll choose a book from their library, and I'll, you know, start their microphone. And so as I'm reading the book, the app is tracking me and it'll make like cool sound effects, animal noises, some sort of things like that. And so, you know, if I'm in a second grade classroom reading and there's a joke or something, it'll make a laugh track. If there's an animal, it'll make a cool animal noise. And so, you know, for these kids, it's really fun. And like I said, it seems like a simple solution, but it's really having a great impact. They have great traction. And I look forward to really seeing how the company grows.
Yeah, I think Novel Effect is also one of the coolest companies that I've looked at. Like imagining when you're reading a book to a kid, if there's like a penguin on the page, a penguin noise comes up. Or if there's like a dolphin noise comes up. I think that's a really unique solution to helping kids fall in love with reading. Because as someone who grew up reading a lot, I really felt like it helped develop my reading and also writing skills. So I think Novel Effect is doing great work and helping in that regard. As for another startup that I've recently looked at, there's this company called Musicplay. And what they do is they pretty much are like a masterclass for music education specifically. So for example, you can learn how to sing or like play guitar from someone like Taylor Swift. And that's really appealing and interesting for someone who's learning how to play music for the first time. They'd rather learn from modules from, you know, a well-known singer and be able to practice on their own following the platform. So they are actually in talks of releasing their product soon, and I'm really excited to use it and try learning music from them.
Yeah, that's really cool to have the chance to kind of have the ability to learn music through technology and, you know, not traditional ways. For example, like personally, I've played the drums for, I don't even know at this point, probably over 10 years. And I've just been in band and learning through a teacher, like in person my entire life. But having the opportunity to kind of do that through technology and with the Musicplay platform would be really cool. That's a great transition because it would be great to know more about what you guys are looking for in these startups in order, you know, this cool criteria that I've mentioned in the past couple of episodes, but kind of the most important aspects of a successful edtech startup.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say that my answer is cool, but something I've started to really prioritize is just how easy the product or service is to implement. Like I touched on earlier, not many schools are really willing to move away from the learning tools that they're already using. And if there's a great product idea that your company is introducing, but it's an absolute headache for teachers or students to use, it's probably not going to be a big hit, right? Like the next time that the budgets come up, there's probably not going to make it past that. It's probably going to get cut just because people aren't enjoying using that platform, that product. And that's why I really like asking founders to explain, you know, how I as a consumer would use their product, or ask them to explain, you know, their product to a five-year-old. And this is something that I feel like is especially important in edtech, given the fact that these products are being used by younger children or just people in general who are looking to learn something.
Yes. Yeah, so I think one thing that I look for when I'm looking at an edtech startup is how sticky it is, pretty much how easy it is, like Jiva mentioned, to use, but also how important it is for them to have this product rather than try to replace it with something else. I've noticed that the largest edtech companies in the world, the Kahoots, the Duolingos, PowerSchool, Coursera, all those companies created a solution to a large problem, and they made their solution the easiest to implement and also the most useful and easy to use. And as a result, their users continue to stick with them. They continue to use that product because it would be a lot harder and more expensive to try to find something else rather than continuing to use that startup. And that's why they're all billion-dollar companies today.
Gotcha. And yeah, those are some great points that you guys mentioned and kind of looking for different things in startups and what's important and what's not. I think a great transition to that is talking about an investment that we recently made in Lessonby. I think both of you and myself included, all on the team and learned a lot through that journey and figuring out what made it different, what really made it like a key investment and key opportunity, not only for us, but for the students that were getting the education provided by that company. So I guess it'd be great to hear more about that journey that you guys had with Lesson B.
Yeah, definitely. Lesson B is something that was special to me because it was the first deal I actually sourced. And so it was a super cool feeling to have, you know, that day one source deal and to have pushed it through all our stages of diligence and eventually get it approved for investment. And I actually got an email this morning saying that after a very, very, very long process that our check is on the way, meaning that Lesson B is officially a portfolio company of Hillside Ventures, which is super cool. So shout out to everybody that helped during that process. And in terms of ups and downs about Lesson B, you know, in an oversaturated market, the team definitely had to do a lot of digging into just identify the real differentiators that made Lesson B stand out. But at the end of the day, we did our due diligence, and it really led us to believe that this company is offering a unique solution. And, you know, they're tackling an important topic in social emotional learning, something that is being taken more seriously and more in trend. It's receiving federal funding. And so, yeah, we have a lot of faith in this company.
Yeah, so just to go off on that, like I mentioned earlier, we really look for companies that are tackling a big pain point and are a really sticky product. They help make schools' lives easier and help the students learn easier. We found that Lesson B provided an online platform for health education, so the students can just follow the modules and they'll receive personalized feedback rather than having the gym teacher come in to teach health. We found that a lot of schools are underfunded and are trying to make, you know, budget cuts and trying to save money in that regard. And we felt that this platform is an all-in-one solution, and this is worth their money. This is worth investing in now so they don't have to keep hiring, you know, gym teachers to teach health in the future. And they can also invest in their students' social and emotional learning. When their students are, you know, feeling their best and are feeling comfortable with their mental health, I've noticed that they tend to perform their best and will continue to help the school districts in the future.
Gotcha. And yeah, that was a great overview to Lesson B in and of itself as an investment, kind of the obstacles you guys hurdled and everything that, you know, the company provides, the value that it brings, why it's different. And it's a great perspective, especially from the student investor side of things. And I think it's cool to hear about how we've been able to progress and Jiva being his first deal sourced, his first founder call turning into a key ed tech investment for our portfolio. So I think that's actually a really cool thing to have and kind of flex over other people. But yeah, I just wanted to transition more to the Hillside sort of things and talk more about what you guys have done in the fund and kind of like your day-to-day activities and kind of what you've been doing here at the fund.
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, this is my second semester at the fund, principal of the EdTech vertical, which has been awesome. We have so many cool people on this EdTech vertical team that I can tell are really passionate about education. We've done really well so far this semester, I'd say, just sourcing good deals, doing good diligence, and so I have faith that we're going to keep that up. Honestly, I'm definitely still getting adjusted, you know, with it being my second semester. There are still things that I do have to learn, things that I have to do better, and, you know, it's kind of venture capital itself, I feel like, is something where you're really learning on the job. And so, yeah, it's been nice to take a leadership role and be so involved. This Hillside has some awesome people, and just so getting to meet these people in the fund, see what they're interested in, see what they're passionate about, has been super useful to me and really helped me just grow as an individual.
Yeah, so this is my third semester at Hillside, and I've noticed such tremendous growth, both personally and also professionally. And I've noticed this growth, not just for me, but for everyone around me. During my first semester when I joined, I worked with a bunch of talented individuals who were mostly seniors, and they all went on to graduate that semester. We had about 4 or 5 returning members, and we had to sort of build everything from scratch again and had to learn together. And I'm really happy with how it turned out. I feel like we had a lot of tremendous additions to the team, both last semester and also this semester. I've noticed that everyone has been super committed, has been very, very easy to work with. Everyone has been, you know, more than meeting expectations. And I'm really glad to see how this is going to turn out moving forward.
Yeah, and that's great that you guys mentioned that, because it just brings me to the point, like, you guys have, we all have gotten so much out of Hillside, and I just want the audience to kind of hear from your guys' perspective is what have you really gotten out of this fund and this opportunity that has been brought to us, just kind of as like a class, a fund, an experience in a way.
Yeah, so I think the single, like the biggest thing that I have gotten out of Hillside Ventures is that I think I'm just more confident, interestingly enough, just overall as a person. You know, coming into Hillside, I had some clue of what to expect, but I also had no clue what to expect. And so being thrown into that first founder call, being thrown into that first InsurTech conference that we went to, there were a lot of moments where I really hesitated, where I was afraid to go start that conversation, go cold email this person. And so this is something I'm just so much more comfortable with doing now. It's kind of, I've been able to develop the mindset that at the end of the day, like I'm a professional as well. You know, I am able to invest my money into this company. And so in a funny way, like when I'm talking to those startups, like they're kind of, I wouldn't say they have to respect me, but in one way or another, like I am the bigger person in that conversation. Like I have the money. And so, you know, just kind of having funny things like that, funny mindsets like that has really allowed me to develop overall as a person and just, yeah, like I said, be more confident and, you know, take opportunities to give my input and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So over the past few semesters, I would say Hillside has really helped me in three main ways. The first being developing an investor mindset. I've learned to not, you know, just take founders at their word, not just accept information as true, but to, you know, dive deep into it, to fact check everything, and to make sure I'm covering all my bases before, you know, proposing an investment or presenting to our board. The second thing I've really gained from this is mentorship. Both our professor, Greg Riley, and also past Hillside alums, they've all been tremendous resources for me. And they've been people that I can go to with any questions, for any advice, all sorts of things, not just professionally, but also personally. And the last thing is the sense of community that this has created for me. I see Hillside members walking all around campus, and it's nice to see familiar faces, and not just people that you just know from class, but people that you've worked with for hours and hours on almost a daily basis. So it's really exciting to see how something that initially started as a student club has now become this established student VC firm and has provided so many great opportunities for our students.
Yeah, just kind of going off that, yeah, it's been a wonderful experience in and of, you know, just being able to connect with like-minded people. So Danush, Jiva, they are very motivated. Like, they are much smarter than I am. And being able to be in a room with them and hear what their thoughts are on different companies and what they've been doing has been a really cool experience, not only them, but everyone else in the fund. We all bring something new to the table and is something that has helped us all grow together. And yeah, kind of just going off of that point, it would be great if you guys could give some tips to the audience on being successful in the edtech space, in the venture capital space, trying to like break into this area, anything like that.
Yeah, sure. I think my biggest advice is to look to actually solve problems in the industry. So problems that student and faculty are experiencing, and not just focus on incorporating technology into education without a specific need being addressed or a problem being solved. And I know this is kind of contrasting to the points we made earlier on about how cool AR is and how cool AI is, but it's really easy to obsess over the new types of technology that are popular and just try to be the first to like incorporate it into everything. And so like I said, you know, I'll admit myself that the metaverse is cool. I find VR, AR, all that stuff super cool, but it's hard to succeed as a startup by just being cool. And so to be successful, the technologies do actually have to have a problem. They have to have some sort of value to the people that are using this product, whether it be making learning fun, you know, making homeschool easier, or just helping neurodivergent students grasp material better, right? They have to have some sort of purpose. And I really think that's key.
Yeah. So for me, in the edtech space, I think the biggest piece of advice I would give is talk to the learners, talk to students, talk to professionals who are looking to upskill themselves, figure out what they want, what they would use, what the schools would actually be willing to purchase, and then base your idea off of that. Because it's easy to come up with an idea, but it's really difficult to come up with a great idea, the next big thing. So yeah, that would be my biggest advice in that regard. And as for venture in general, I've learned that in order to be a successful VC, you have to be really comfortable meeting new people and making those relationships, especially in short amounts of time. You're going to be talking to hundreds of companies and meeting so many different investors at demo days, pitch days, conferences, and you have to be able to be comfortable making those connections, following up, and being both a source of value as well as someone who benefits from that connection as well.
Yeah, definitely. I just want to add on to that. You know, given that a lot of what we do is look at early stage and seed startups, you know, especially in those stages, as much as you're trying to sell this product or service, you're selling yourself. And that's why we look at teams so much. That's why we look at their connections, experts, advisory boards, and that sort of thing. So, you know, you really do have to put yourself out there and put yourself in the best position to succeed.
Yeah, just bringing up another point from what you guys said, it's actually been insane that we've been able to do an amazing job sourcing this semester as compared to last. We've basically sourced more than we have all of last semester already, which is something that's really cool to see and kind of see our database fill up. And just kind of on that front and seeing the progress that we've been able to make, the growth from really not knowing anything in venture capital to going into meetings and, like as Jiva mentioned, kind of having more authority than, oh, we're just students. But in this case, we're investors. And yeah, we deserve respect from that end. And it's something that's, it is a little bit weird at first, but you definitely get used to it. You get used to the feeling that it's just another person you're talking to and you're just having a conversation, learning more about their business. And I think that's important to realize at the end of the day, it's not something that's super scary. It's just something that's a part of the game. Talking to people is really the main thing. It's probably one of the most important things, if not the most important thing, because the ability to communicate and build those relationships are what are going to keep you in the game and progressing. So kind of that's wrapped up for the episode. If you guys have any questions about the podcast, please feel free to reach out to both me, Joe, Jiva, Danush. We'll all be happy to answer your questions. You can stay updated with us through this podcast, our Substack newsletter, our social media, so our Twitter, at Hillside Ventures, and I'll make sure to add both Jiva and Danush's Twitter in the show notes. But with that, we appreciate your time listening to the Hillside Ventures podcast. This was Shiva Mittal here with Jiva and Danush, and we hope you have a great rest of your day.